Hello, I'm Michael Watson, and this is the Influence Watch podcast. I'm fond of saying, it's in my Twitter bio, that there's always a labor angle. From bad MLB umpiring to anti-Hamas demonstrations, big labor is there. So I am the least surprised person to discover that the left-wing environmental, social, and corporate governance, or ESG, activist investing movement is backed up in part by, and operates in service of, big labor and its everything leftist agenda. Joining me and my colleague Robert Stilson, who studies the ESG movement for Capital Research Center, is Vinny Verduccio of the Institute for the American Worker. Vinny, welcome back.
Hey, Michael, Robert, thank you for having me on.
And Robert, thank you for coming on again.
Yeah, always fun. Thanks, Mike.
So, Vinny, tell us about y'all's report.
Sure. Well, this is available at our website, Institute for the American Worker. It's at i4aw.org, and it is what the next president will face, that the next president will face an emerging ESG threat and big labor's push to force investment managers and publicly traded companies to ignore fiduciary duty and promote unions. And Sam Adelson joined me with a report. He did, in full disclosure, he did the heavy lifting with FGA, one of the foremost ESG experts in the country. And exactly, Michael, like you were talking about, what we wanted to do was show that, you know, ESG, it's not just about the E. And Sam likes to joke, you know, these letters are the Sesame Street letters are brought to you today. It is the S and the G. And we wanted to focus a lot of this ESG energy, not just on the environmental part of ESG, but on how unions are using and abusing their members' pensions, and also public sector unions are putting their thumb on the scale to take away the rights from private sector workers, specifically the right to hear both sides of the story on unionization, and also the right to have a secret ballot election when a private sector union comes to organize them.
So let's proceed there. So a lot of it seems to be, like you mentioned, in union organize, in inducing companies to not either present their views, their honest opinions on whether a union should be organized or what the potential consequences might be, or to allow the unions to organize by card check, which, you know, Vinny, if you could give the quick 10-second elevator pitch against card check. So is that kind of the core of what the unions are doing in the ESG movement?
It comes in a couple different flavors, and you are absolutely correct, but let's just, you know, get those categories down. First and foremost, non-interference proposals. So a company shall not talk to their employees about unionization. It's basically a neutrality agreement, and then recognize via card check.
This basically allows when the unions are campaigning to organize a union that their campaign promises, they get to make all the campaign promises you want, and the employer says nothing in reply.
Exactly. And they also have this process known as card check, where it's an open petition process, denying workers the right to a secret ballot. So essentially, the union can promise the employee the moon. There's no one to check those claims. And also, there's no time for the employee then to reflect, hey, does that make sense? Yes or no? And then have the private vote ballot.
But I mean, in the age of cancel culture, you know, the ability to go into a private voting booth and make the best decision, express what is the best decision for yourself is probably more crucial now than it ever has been.
Yeah. And especially with card check, in addition to denying that time to reflect, denying employees the needed information, there also could be intimidation, coercion, and deception. I mean, I've testified before Congress on this. Card solicitors. They said it wasn't the union, but it was an overzealous card solicitor that the NLRB essentially condoned a solicitor saying that, you know, the union's going to come to your house and, you know, slash your car tires or get your children. That was okay because it wasn't directly to the union. Also includes deception, you know, come to this pizza party or sign up for this raffle. That's in big, you know, 16-point font at the top of a card. And in little 6-point font at the bottom, it's I hereby authorize. So That's car check. That is incorporated in some of these non-interference proposals. That's the first flavor. The second flavor is, Mike, I know you've talked about this before, but, you know, DEI. It's, you know, requiring DEI disclosure. And, you know, on the surface, hey, what's, you know, what's wrong with that? What's wrong with disclosing diversity? But the catch is that the union then uses that to say, oh, this is a sexist or racist company. And they hammer them with this anti-PR campaign called a corporate campaign. Once again, that is utilized to have the company capitulate and agree to one of these neutrality agreements to take away those rights from workers. So those are the first two flavors. The third flavor is your just typical union politics, them pushing for, you know, whether it's an environmental agenda or other political agenda, using the money that they control but do not own to push whatever political agenda they are advancing. And to give you the latest example, the Teamsters magazine, and once again, the Teamsters, whose Central States pension fund just had to be bailed out by the federal government. The cover of the Teamsters magazine was all about ESG, and in typical Teamsters spelling fashion, they said that the, you know, S stands for workers. So you can, you know, once again, let's go back to Sesame Street on that one.
Robert, you got any thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I think one of the interesting things I saw in the report is you make the point that one of the ways these unions are pushing ESG is through shareholder resolutions. And that's something I've looked at a lot because it involves, you know, a lot of the groups we look at here at the Capital Research Center. The shareholder resolutions are, of course, in the case of a union, like, you know, a pension fund would hold stock in a company and then they file a resolution with the company to be voted on at the annual meeting. And a lot of times these deal with ESG issues. And you know, you make the point that not only do these labor unions file these things themselves, but they also work with, you know, other asset managers, nonprofit activist groups to file, I guess you might say, labor-friendly resolutions at corporations. You mentioned As You Sow, which is the, in your report, which is probably the most prominent, at least certainly the most prominent nonprofit shareholder activist group in the country. And they produce this thing that I look at every year called the proxy preview, which is all the shareholder resolutions, not all of them, but most of them, a good preview of the ESG.
The ones that are politically activist in nature tend to appear.
And one of the things that always strikes me about the proxy preview is how many are of these resolutions get filed by unions. Like this year I looked at, you know, the AFL-CIO filed like 14 of them in the preview. You know, the SEIU had five of them. Teamsters.
A lot of the AFLs were on AI.
A lot of them were on AI. And then you'll get like Amalgamated Bank, right? Which is a publicly traded company itself, which is kind of interesting to have that filing shareholder resolutions at another.
Which also has union ties. Don't forget that.
Exactly. Yeah. So they'll file them too. So it's just, it's interesting to me, the shareholder resolution tactic of trying to pressure corporations, you know, outside of the political process to weigh in on these, you know, clearly political issues seems to be something that unions and aligned interests have really gone full bore behind.
Well, and Vinny, you can probably speak to this. We saw now there's a new rule. My understanding is there's a new rule in how board directors are elected that gives outside investors, so not the board, but a group that, whether it's an ideological activist like a labor union or an activist investor in the way that business types use that phrase, somebody who wants to come in and change the way the company is run for profit, that they can change the way the board is, that it makes it easier to get rival directors on the board. And we saw it was the Change to Win, which is basically the SEIU, tried to do that at Starbucks, didn't they?
That was the Strategic Organizing Center, is, you know, who they...
Change to Win.
Former Democrat NLRB chair Wilma Leeman and, you know, a couple others on the Starbucks board. And, you know, magically when Starbucks, you know, capitulated and released the, hey, here's how we're going to be working with the Starbucks unions, you know, all of that went away. So that was right before proxy season started when all of that went down. But yeah, all of this comes down to, you know, it's either the union politics or the unions directly or through their allies and let's say like the New York City government, which is using their pension plans to push a lot of this stuff, to bully corporations into, once again, taking away rights from workers, such as the right to hear both sides of the story or the right to a secret ballot.
So, you know, we've kind of focused, at least for the first 10 minutes or so of our discussion, on the labor organizing elements of the ESG movement. But obviously, you know, big labor's agenda goes way beyond just adding members and money to itself, or even, you know, wages and hours for workers. What are some examples, and I put this to both of you, obviously, Robert, because you've read through the proxy preview, of unions, union pension funds, government worker union pension funds, pushing more social, I mean, for lack of a better word, I use socially progressive or socially leftist, but outside the economic core or outside the labor organizing core where a union might have a, you know, tangential interest.
Yeah. Robert, why don't you go ahead first?
Yeah. You know, I've recently been looking at Amazon's proxy statement. They put their proxy statement out not too long ago. I think their annual meeting is at the end of May. And they had 14 different shareholder resolutions this year that they're going to be voting on and all over the map on ESG issues. And at least two of those were brought by union funds, the Teamsters and the AFL-CIO, and then a couple others dealt with labor issues. But it was kind of interesting. The resolution brought by the Teamsters at Amazon was for something called a just transition report, right? Which deal, they just to quote from it, I mean, they say, a key area of uncertainty for investors is how some of Amazon's technological solutions to the climate crisis will impact, you know, and then will impact jobs and communities. And they say that Amazon has a key role in supporting social fairness as the world attempts to decarbonize. So they kind of bring all this stuff together, the social issues, the climate change.
I'm just going to jump in. This is very ironic because the Teamsters have tried to make, you know, very sort of transparent overtures to the right in the recent couple of years, and they're presenting this to a publicly traded company.
So that's what jumped out immediately to me.
Yeah, and on the overtures to the right, Mike, I know you've done great work on American Compass. I mean, one of the main bills they're pushing is the TEAM Act, which lo and behold would have, you know, the union, or as they say, worker representation on corporate boards. So it all kind of comes together. But yeah, let's step back for a second and, you know, before getting into some of more specifics, talk about fiduciary duty and, you know, where a lot of this comes from. So on the federal level, and this is mostly through for private sector pension plans, private sector unions, there's a thing called the Employee Income Retirement Security Act the Employee Retirement Income Security Act, ERISA. And ERISA has what I think is a very strict interpretation or a strict pronouncement of fiduciary duty. It's you have to maximize returns and minimize risk. And that is what, if you are in a pension plan, and I'm not talking about, you know, hey, let's do some lefty ESG plan where I'm going to put, you know, my play money. I'm talking about my retirement. You have a fiduciary duty under ERISA to maximize return, minimize risk.
The principle is that it is not the manager's money. And
exactly.
They should not be using it for their purposes, but for the purposes of the plan.
Yeah, it's, you know, for the sole benefit. And that's what, you know, ERISA is. The sole benefit of the participants and the beneficiaries of the plan. So they should not be subverting any of these agendas to maximizing return and minimizing risk. Unfortunately, what the Biden administration has done is they're, you know, reinterpreting it. And there's a ping pong with this. Republican administrations, you know, they're protecting the retirement. They're saying, you know, fiduciary duty means just making sure that, you know, the plan is solvent. And then in Democrat administrations, they say, well, loosey-goosey, you can, you know, play around and do, and, you know, going back to even the Clinton administration, you know, doing good by doing well. Robert Reich.
Around 2000, the unions in California were calling it double bottom line.
Yeah, so
you know, the social bottom line in addition to the actual real money bottom line.
Yeah, I mean, I've been doing ESG since before it was cool, since before it was even called ESG. I mean, when I was at in the Bush Department of Labor, we released two interpretive bulletins basically saying, yes, you have to, you know, focus on that fiduciary duty. And that was a pushback to the Clinton Department of Labor. So it's a ping pong that goes back and forth. You know, everything that is old is new again. And now it's just wrapped up with this, you know, ESG mantra. But I mean, this is something that
when you think about it, decades. Right. And when you think about it institutionally, it makes sense. I mean, Robert mentioned As You Sow. I don't know, Robert, their ties to the left are obviously extensive. And obviously they're an ideological activist group. You know, like who do they get backing, or are they sort of self-contained?
As You Sow, I mean, they get funding from sort of the foundations that you would expect, right? That we talk about all the time. I mean, I think the biggest single identifiable funder that I found, this is a couple of years old, but they've gotten a lot of money from George Soros's foundations. That was 2020, 2021. I think they got some big grants there, but I think that's the biggest grant that I've been able to find. So, but I mean, it gets back to it. Like, I mean, you can talk about ESG investing versus ESG activism, and if the investors are also activists and the shareholders, right, then they kind of combine those two. But it's fundamentally about pushing policy outside of the democratic process. Things you wouldn't be able to achieve legislatively, you try to achieve through corporations, is the way I see a lot of the activism side of ESG. And there's the investing side of ESG too.
And it goes for the labor specific stuff too. I mean, we mentioned card check not interference neutrality. I mean, that was when I kind of first got to Washington around 2008, 2009, that was the Obama administration's big omnibus union bill when they came to power, the woefully named Employee Free Choice Act that was basically going to sideline the secret ballot entirely. That was shot down by a bipartisan group of senators, you know, Republicans and Democrats, during that period when the Democrats had the supermajority in the Senate. So it was effectively filibustered, and it never became law. And then it just got laid upon the table, and you know, they've been trying to put it to, you know, piece it together with regulation, but now they're trying to push it through corporate boardrooms. It is exactly the case that you're talking about, where it's stuff they couldn't get through the legislative process, and that might be legally suspect if they tried to do it through, you know, the sort of Supreme Court major questions doctrine kind of thing, if they tried to do it through the regulatory process or they try to do it through another process.
And it's worth saying, just on the ESG shareholder resolution side, I did a report last year just kind of trying to document how aggressive the demands of those resolutions have become over the years. You know, they start small, they get there's maybe a little bit of pushback, you get some compromise, and then the next year you submit something more, and you just kind of march it through that way. And anecdotally, that seems to have reached sort of a pinnacle around 2020, 2021. And then since then, you've seen pushback against it, lower levels of support for some of these ESG resolutions. And I think that's a function both of how far the activists have pushed things over the last few years, and just the general awareness of the issue amongst folks who just was kind of flying under the radar.
And also interest rates. I mean, money isn't free anymore.
Yeah. You have to prioritize things.
You have to prioritize, and, you know, paying the activists to make them go away is now more expensive.
And I mean, the other thing is that now there is a lot more attention and a lot more pushback, both at the state level and at the federal level. I mean, you know, Biden's first veto was pushing back against the Congressional Review Act, saying, yeah, we have to, you know, respect fiduciary duty, and pushing back on his Department of Labor's ESG rule. You see at the state level, state legislators, governors, attorney generals saying we will not use our state funding or our state pension plans for this. You know, some are going a little far, but for the most part, it's no, don't use state funds for these political agendas, and, you know, backing away and saying, no, we will not engage in ESG or work with ESG funds.
So that's actually a good segue into what I was going to talk about next. Obviously, at the federal level, for the time being, you have a Department of Labor that's committed to this sort of union ESG approach. But what can be done at either through state level policy or through congressional investigation or through private action to put a check on this sort of activity?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's start federal. And, I think ERISA is pretty clear. You probably don't need congressional action, but what you do need is a new interpretation. And whether it's President Trump or, future president, rolling back the Biden ESG, going back to essentially the Trump administration's rule with a few tweaks. The Trump rule was much, much better than what was Biden. It was near perfect. The only thing I would change with the Trump rule is they had what's known as an all things being equal standard. So basically, if you have two investments that are exactly the same, then you can put your thumb on the scale and go with the ESG one if you want. The problem there is that to put your thumb on the scale, you still have to do due diligence. You still have to spend time, and time is money and it's effort. So I would much rather see a something that is almost exactly like the former Trump rule, but with a caput et novia standard. So essentially flipping a coin. If you have two investments that are exactly the same, just pick one. You can't expend more resources into figuring out, well, this one's a little more politically popular, so let's go with that one. So basically what I'd like to see is a new DOL going back to the Trump standard, but jettisoning all things being equal and go with competent Nadia.
And then at the state municipal level?
At the state level, they're doing a lot of good things, just making sure that you're not investing in ESG funds, that if you're protecting the taxpayer dollars that are supposed to go to your public employees' retirement, just make sure, once again, you are using similar fiduciary duty standards to the feds of maximizing return, minimizing risk, investing for the sole, with a sole eye on participants and beneficiaries. And I know a lot of states are looking at that. And I would also say that that should be at a fund by fund analysis as opposed to, brokerage house by brokerage house. So, if a brokerage house has one ESG portfolio, don't divest in the entire brokerage house, but make sure that your state is not divesting or is not investing in that ESG portfolio that is, frankly, not investing for maximizing risk and minimizing maximizing return and minimizing risk.
And presumably, this would apply not just to the investments, but to the proxy vote decisions, too, because the certain round of resolutions, they're going to still be submitted, but, they don't mean much if the votes aren't, behind them.
All right. So, Robert, do you have any sort of final commentary before we let you guys go?
No, I thought it was a really interesting report. The labor side of the ESG movement, particularly as I've looked at it through the shareholder activism lens, is something I've noticed but probably haven't talked as much about as it's worth. So I thought that was really great.
Yeah, and it's nice to see, and I'll commend Vinny and his co-authors on this, to see there's obviously, because it's so big an issue and because there's so much money at stake, that the E in ESG has gotten so much of the light that has been shined on ESG. But it's nice to see that we're moving broader into the S&G and also focusing on how there's a labor angle to everything, how there's a labor angle, how the union movement, Robert mentioned the Teamsters at Amazon are very much part of this whole everything leftist agenda that's trying to, do global warming regulations and manage every part of American life from their friends in Washington, D.C. So Vinny, before we let you go, is there anything else you'd like to promote that you guys at I4AW or any of your other projects are doing?
We're going to have a couple more interesting studies coming out, and Mike, I'd love to chat with you about those, but I'll just give a teaser and not give you exactly what those are. have an article that came out this week in the Washington Examiner on the SALT Act.
You and I dropped op-eds on the SALT Act on the same day.
Oh, Mike, I have not seen yours, so please send that my way. But once again, for the study, it's i4aw.org. Love everybody to come to the website, see that. We also have the Daily Digest, which the staff does a great job of keeping it essentially the Drudge Report of labor news. And Michael, I'm assuming that your article is probably already on there, and I just haven't seen it yet, because Chris McCoy and our team does a fantastic job of having the latest and the greatest. And usually I get my labor news from her on Labor News Today, which is on.
Yes, I am a subscriber to their daily news email, which is the first thing I read about work in the morning.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
All right. Well, thanks again to Vinny Vernuccio of the Institute for the American Worker. We will include links to I4AW's report on Big Labor's ESG activities in today's show notes. That's our show for this week. We encourage our listeners to subscribe on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify. And if you have subscribed, thank you, and please leave us a 5-star rating. Those ratings really help us find new listeners, especially if they come with a positive review. We'll see you all next week.